The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Bears fans, and welcome to another episode of the Bears Link podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Link, and we're going to be talking about the big win over the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving, and also, as usual, we're going to be taking a look at the next game coming up with the Giants in New Jersey. Let's get it on. Fans, and welcome to episode 7 of the Bears Link podcast. As I mentioned in the opener, I'm your host, Andrew Link, and with me, as always, is my brother, Kevin.
Yellow.
So we are going to dive into Chase Daniel and the Turkey Day edition of Bears football, and also get you all primed up and ready for this week's jaunt against the Giants. So,
you were practicing jaunt against the Giants.
No, that just came right out. I wish that I practiced that sort of stuff, but I ain't got time for that. But thoughts on Chase Daniel and the Bears on Thanksgiving. That was, obviously we've talked about the turnaround, three games, division games in 12 days, 84 hours, I think it was, between the end of the Vikings game and kickoff for the Lions game. So obviously it was a difficult situation, but thoughts on the game?
Well, Matt Nagy accomplished three division wins in 12 days, and I believe that took John Fox 3 years to do. Mm-hmm. So that's impressive. Mm-hmm. Overall, I feel like the game, you know, pretty much played out exactly how I was kind of anticipating. It was, you know, kind of low scoring. Chase Daniel was competent. You know, he did his thing. He wasn't crappy. He wasn't phenomenal, but he was pretty good. But I thought that overall, what I took away from that game is that, like, it made me miss Mitch Trubisky a little bit. You know, there was just some plays where I think Chase Daniel was sacked four times. And there were, in almost every one of them, I was thinking, man, Trubisky would have escaped that. Trubisky would have got the ball. He would have been running downfield right now. You just saw that gap. Like, Chase Daniel's ceiling, it is only so high, you know? And he can only do so much. So you kind of see the limitations, but he plays really well, I think, within those limitations. So he didn't take a lot of shots downfield. I really don't really remember. I think there was one early on that he took downfield that he missed, and he missed a Tariq Cohen touchdown pass just barely earlier in the game. But he made most of his throws. He ended up with 106 passer rating. He had 2 touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over, and he even caught a pass. So all was well.
Yeah, and I think that's mostly a testament to Matt Nagy and his system. And look, let's give Chase Daniel his credit here, because the guy obviously knows the system. He's been a backup quarterback for his entire career, and he continues to prepare like a starter and be ready in the event that he needs to play. He was prepared. I thought that while he didn't hit a lot of deeper throws, he did hit his reads pretty quickly. Obviously he's limited in comparison to Mitch Trubisky. He missed a couple throws out there. But I don't think that the offense was super limited with him in there. I do think that perhaps we see a little bit different stuff this week with, you know, 2 weeks to prepare for the Giants, you know, in a manner of speaking, knowing that Chase Daniel's going to be the starting quarterback. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens this week. But yeah, I thought he played pretty well. I thought that the Bears' defense was maybe a little lethargic, a little tired, a little just off their game. That's to be expected with that quick of a turnaround. I think that happens, especially coming off of a big, you know, kind of emotional win against the Vikings, which is why a lot of people had bad feelings about that Lions game. So, yeah, I mean, all things considered, I was pleased with the outcome. I didn't really have thoughts on it positively or negatively either way heading into the game.
It was just kind of like a whole thing. I don't have anything to say about it.
It's like, get it over with. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off and be done with it.
Move on. Yeah, one thing I will say that I saw, and if you dissect and digest as much content as we do, you probably have seen some of these silly stats about Eddie Jackson that are just awesome, really, where he has as many touchdowns as Julio Jones this year. He's leading the NFL in defensive touchdowns since 2015, but he's, you know, got drafted in 2017. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of fun things. And so, once again, I feel like the best highlight of the game was the dancing. That was my favorite part.
Yeah, the dancing, that was pretty good. Little ode to Motown from Prince Amukamara. So, yeah, that was fun. I think that the Bears, hey, they're a fun team. They're having a lot of fun. They're young. They seem like a very tight-knit group. I mean, this is what we saw Ryan Pace building for several years here. And yeah, we had to endure some bad football on the field. But you got the sense that in the locker room, you were starting to build something. And you saw that there was a lot of young talent, and some of it just needed to blossom, you know? And then you add Matt Nagy to that mix. You get some different guys in there from an offensive perspective, some different minds. And hey, look, I mean, Ryan Pace has got to be the front runner for the executive of the year right now. And I think he's done an excellent job of putting this team together.
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, you don't build the Bears might be set up in like the sweetest position, you know, for the next X amount of years, you know, as any other team in the NFL, when you just look at the age of the roster. I mean, it's crazy. Like, what they always say, like, they don't have anyone that's, you know, everyone's under 30 years old on this team, pretty much.
Yeah, I actually think Chase Daniel's the only starter over 30 on the whole team. So
this is going to be around for at least a few years. The thing in the NFL is it's pretty hard to sustain success for a really long time, you know, unless you're Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, but, you know, or unless you have one of these, you know, quarterbacks that falls off this golden quarterback tree. But so hopefully they're going to be around for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and it's going to be a really fun window of winning football and hopefully Super Bowls, or at least one.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's very tough because once you start, look, you know, in a couple of years, you're going to have...
You have to re-sign guys. You have to let guys go.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is you're going to have to pay Trubisky at some point. I mean, assuming that he keeps ascending the way that he has. You know, you're looking at 30 plus million a year for him. You're going to have Khalil Mack here, who's still going to be an integral part of this team and is still going to be in his prime, I would think. Pass rushers usually age pretty gracefully. So, you know, you're paying him a lot of money. You know, and at some point you're going to have other guys that you're going to have to pay money to. I mean, Eddie Jackson is going to come around, and he's going to have his hand out in a couple of years. And, yeah, so it's
coordinators always take new jobs and stuff. I mean, there's all types of curses.
Yeah, well, that stuff I'm not worried about, because that's why I wanted a head coach who also called plays, because then you don't have to worry about losing your coordinator.
You got one side of the ball covered.
Well, but on defense, if we have the talent that we have on this team, like let's say at the end of the year, Vic Fangio gets hired by the Packers to replace Mike McCarthy as head coach, and he fires Mike Pettine, all right? And Mike Pettine says, well, screw this. We're gonna play the I-94, you know, swap-a-rama game with coaches. Then I'll head down to Chicago, and I'll be the defensive coordinator of the Bears. Do you think that this team would be worse with Mike Pettine as defensive coordinator? Personally, at this point, I think that Vic Fangio plays a relatively small role in how good this defense is.
It's hard to say, man, and I don't. It's like the NFL can just change so quickly year to year. I mean, you just look at the Rams, even though they're 10-1 or whatever they are. Their defense was killer last year. They suck this year. And I think they probably still have the same defensive coordinator. I think it's Wade Phillips, is it? Is he over there? I don't know. Either way, I mean, it just... I'm not a good judge on that. I'm not the right person to ask. But they certainly do have a lot of talent that should be able to transcend the defensive coordinator, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that, you know... Yeah, obviously, I do think defensive coordinators matter, but I think talent matters more. I think that Vic Fangio is a pretty conservative defensive coordinator when it comes down to it. So that's why, in my opinion, I think you're only getting more aggressive if you go away from Vic. I mean, obviously, you're going to still play a similar scheme because that's what your personnel is. But you could be more aggressive with it, and I think you'd be even more successful. But I'm an aggressive kind of person, which is why I really love Matt Nagy as the head coach, because he's been, you know, by far the most aggressive head coach of the Chicago Bears in my lifetime. So, but, yeah, Detroit was, that was a good game, a good way to cap off that little three-game stretch.
I'm so glad we beat him twice, man. And I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and I'll just bring it up again because I just think it's funny, and I like to revel in despair of other people. And you know, I mentioned the Lions; they were just talking, like the Lions fans, at least, that like actually write and report and record podcasts where, you know, calling the Bears just trash, Trubisky's garbage, the running game is phenomenal. No, it's not. And then we went out there and stomped them out the first time. And then to come back out and beat them again is beautiful. And then after that, I was looking at, I just went on, you know, whatever website, just looking at the comments section, just, you know, chuckling or whatever. And I see the guy that, I don't even want to say where I saw this stuff, but I'll just tell you that the guy that wrote the article once again was like, the Bears are garbage. We're just even more garbage. And I was like, man, you really, like, just, like, you cannot even tip your hat. Like, you can't, like, I know you're garbage. You are garbage. But give the Bears some, they're 8-3. Like, my God, this is not a garbage team. Garbage teams don't go 8-3. Anyway, tangent over.
All right, so again, we'll put a little bow on Detroit, move on done. To the Meadowlands.
See you in 2019.
And the New York Giants. So, a little, you know, quick injury report news and all that stuff. We'll get that out of the way. So it does look like on the Giants side that Evan Engram, the tight end, did not practice today. He did not play last week against the Eagles. So that's something to keep an eye on. I don't have any special insider information there on the Giants. I don't know if he's going to play or not, but it's something to keep an eye on. If he does not play, that basically means that the entire Giants offense is Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley. So
that's still pretty scary.
It is scary, but then you have Eli Manning throwing him the ball, and you quite possibly have the worst two tackles in the NFL, with Khalil Mack on one side and Akeem Hicks on the other. I'm sorry, but I'll take my chances.
Well, Akeem Hicks, don't they usually line up on the same side?
Not since the injury for Mack. Mm. He's been on the side of the left tackle because Leonard Floyd is better on the weak side.
Now that you say that, I'm just like replaying those 300-pounders Khalil Mack's been plowing through, and they have been coming from the left, so you are right. You are right. I retract my statement.
So that's all I really got for the Giants. And on the Bears side, Mitch Trubisky was limited in practice today.
I thought he didn't practice at all, did he?
No, he was limited. My understanding is that he probably didn't throw. He did some handoffs. He did, you know, some other stuff. But
some clipboards.
Yeah, so that was pretty much the extent of him. But that is a positive step. He's back at practice, at least.
I think the quote was, the arrow is pointing up from Nagy.
Yeah, I think that's correct. There was, Ian Rappaport recently was on NFL Total Access, kind of said the same thing, that he did practice today and is coming along. I don't personally expect him to play, so we are going to do this episode once again, assuming that Chase Daniel is going to be your starting quarterback.
He must be loving this. He's waited 10 years for this. He started two games previously. He's going to get two in a row.
And a whole week to prepare for it.
A week and a half.
Technically, yeah. Akeem Hicks did not practice today. He was listed as having an Achilles. Huh. I would bet dollars to donuts here that Akeem Hicks is just being given a Veterans Day off and maybe had a little bit of soreness in that general area of his body, so they put it down just so that they can be compliant with the league. Otherwise, yeah, I'm not too worried about that.
Well, sure. I hope so, because that the Achilles is very small,
he's
a big boy.
He was
he needs support.
He was interviewed yesterday. He did a media scrum yesterday, so
I heard. Yeah, he sounded very jovial.
He was very jovial.
In Miami, taking baths and salt.
Yes, and generally, the team does not let injured players talk to the media. So that says a lot to me. I expect Akeem Hicks to not only be healthy and play in the game, but I expect him to completely dominate in the game, which is what Akeem Hicks does.
He's been on a tear recently.
Which is good, good. Sherrick McManus did not participate with a hamstring injury. It didn't see anything happen in the game. So I'm going to guess that him being an integral part of the special teams and the dime package, the dime blitz package that Vic Fangio has been deploying, I'm going to go ahead and say that he's probably okay. But if he doesn't go, I would look for DeAndre Houston Carson and Deion Bush to take over that dime spot and the spot on special teams for him. In some good injury news, we did see Aaron Lynch and Adam Shaheen come out of concussion protocol. They were both full participants in practice today and not on the injury report at all.
So are they cleared? They're out of the protocol?
Yes.
They're good to go.
They're good to go. And that's good news for Jordan Howard, because Adam Shaheen did a really nice job of run blocking against the Vikings. And in the second and third quarter specifically, Jordan Howard was consistently breaking off, four, five, six, 7 yard runs over and over and over again. It was very consistent. So I think that's good news for the Bears running game and obviously their red zone attack. Getting Aaron Lynch back is big for playing Saquon Barkley. I think he's a very good run defender. I think he's a better run defender than he is a pass rusher. So, yeah, I think this is all good news. The Bears have have been incredibly healthy this season. They've also been fortunate with when they've had these injuries. You look at Mac yep. and Robinson being out for the Jets and the Bills, and you look at Trubisky being out for the Lions and the Giants. I mean, you want to talk about teams that you can pick, you know, back-to-back games. If you looked at it at the beginning of the season, these would probably be the games that you said, and hey, this is okay. This is okay if we missed a couple of guys back-to-back in these games.
Yeah, and that's I think that's part of the why this, dare I say, team feels just a little bit magical in a sense. You know, you have to have a little bit of good fortune, and they certainly have had that in regards to the time. They've been super healthy, first of all, and just in general. But when they have had injuries to key guys, they have come at, like, literally the best time possible. So they can afford to be, and I feel like we all kind of think that McMack and Robinson, they probably gave an extra week for sure than they needed to because they had soft schedule. There could be a little bit of that, you know, potentially in play with Trubisky when the original reports from Schefter, I believe, were that, you know, this is a one-game injury. So if he does end up missing the second one, I would think that is another precautionary measure.
Absolutely. I think this team is, they know that they're a good team. I think, you know, when you're talking about the brain trust here of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, look, there's some jockeying for position in the playoffs that starts happening around this time when you're a team that knows that you should be going there at this point in the season. Right or wrong, I don't know if you should really be playing those sorts of games, but you know, it's the NFL. Every game is hard to win. But at the same time, I look at this and I say, if Mitch isn't 100%, if there's any discomfort with him throwing the ball, if he's still waking up in the morning and is a little stiff or whatever, you sit him. Because, look, that Rams game, that Vikings game, that Packers game are more important than this Giants game, in my opinion. And I think you could still beat this Giants team with Chase Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into how easily it'll be in a second. But, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, so as far as the Giants,
I don't have any of my history lessons, you know, so I forgot, but I...
Well, Jay Cutler did get sacked nine times in one half.
Everyone knows that one, so, you know, that happened. So, yeah, once upon a time we went there, and then Jay Cutler got sacked nine times, so
yeah.
That happened. I think we probably lost, I would imagine.
Yep.
I think it was a bloodbath.
It was a bloodbath. It was bad.
Anyway, so that happened. Let's dive into to present day, 2018. The Giants are 3-8. The Bears are 8-3. The tale of two teams, two first-year head coaches going in opposite directions. The Giants, six of their eight losses have come by a score or within one score. So pretty close games, but if you dig deeper underneath that, most of them were kind of like how a lot of the Bears games play out is they were garbage time scores late that made it that way. So they were really losing by a lot more, and the scores don't look as bad as the Giants have been. Though they do seem to be playing better football the last 3 weeks, just from what I've seen. I don't watch a lot of Giants football, but they seem to be trending upward a little bit.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. Again, as I mentioned, you know, if Evan Engram cannot play, that's a huge deal for the Bears, because then you're really concerning yourself with two guys, with OBJ and Saquon Barkley. And you have a 38-year-old Eli Manning, who's under center, who's basically a statue. You have Nate Solder and I can't remember the right tackle's name, but they're both awful. I mean, they are bad.
Yeah, the right tackle's complete trash.
Yeah,
the left tackle is okay. He's serviceable, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, look, if they're already down their number one tight end and they have to bring in their number two tight end then to stay in and block to help with Khalil Mack. And on passing downs, if you need to start using Saquon Barkley to chip Mack instead of going out, you know, directly into a route. And with the way that Roquan Smith has been in coverage on running backs this year, I got to tell you, there's nothing about this team that scares me at all. Their pass rush is crap. They're not particularly great against the run. They're one of the worst run defenses in the NFL.
We're not particularly great at running either.
No, we're not. And that's a thing, and that's fine.
That's why I don't expect this. If you're still waiting for the Jordan Howard breakout game,
it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I don't think it ever will happen.
Although, if everybody wants me to put on my Alex Jones tinfoil hat on for a little bit after we talk about the Giants game here, I will tell you a interesting conspiracy theory that I have. But
okay, we'll get into that. But yeah, I think Jordan Howard's next breakout game will be on whatever his team is next year. Yeah. So unfortunately, it's like very. I don't know. I don't really care, actually. I mean, I would have cared. This would have deeply affected me in the middle of last year if you told me that Jordan Howard, you know, as we know it in 2018, is gone. But we're winning football games, and actually, I think I've seen him. He doesn't care either because we're winning football games, so it's all good. It's all gravy. Now, you say you're not scared about anything. I am scared about a couple things, and the biggest thing I'm scared about is Saquon Barkley. That dude is ridiculous. And the one thing that there's a couple knocks I have on the Bears defense, and one of them is lapses over periods of time being able to tackle people. And if you better bring your tackling pants, you know, on Sunday for Saquon Barkley, because he's a beast. I mean, he's a 60-yard run waiting to happen. I mean, I was just every time I see him on a red zone or something, whatever I'm watching, he's just so good. His quadriceps are like just ridiculous, and he's just a powerful man, and he's got the speed and power, and he also catches a lot of balls out of the backfield, which is something that gives me a little concern because I feel like the Bears struggle with that a little bit. Though they're not like designed quick game passes like the Patriots ran against the Bears a lot. They're more like, well, no one else is open, and here's Saquon Barkley over here in the flat. So
see, that's where it doesn't concern me, though, because Roquan Smith has been really good in those situations. It's when you have the quicker hitter plays to the running backs that I think we've had, you know, the designed, you know, Texas routes and things like that where, you know, they kind of head to the flat and then cut inside on a slant. You've seen Tariq Cohen score on that route earlier this season. I think it was against Tampa Bay. So those are the kind of routes that I think that the Bears struggle with a little bit against running backs. But if you're talking about a running back flaring out into the flat as an outlet, I'm not concerned about that, honestly. And the Bears are the number one rushing defense in the NFL.
They are, but LeGarrette Blount, you know, he got 88 yards, again, two rushing. Off of three, I understand. 3 days rest. I understand. You got some big boys up front. I'm just saying, you gotta bring the focus and the tackling. You gotta really rally to the ball. You gotta just wrap him up, man, because that's one thing that really scares me. If you don't, like, I could easily, don't get me wrong, I could easily see this the following line on Saquon Barkley being like 18 carries, 38 yards, where they just completely shut him down because they can be that good, and they've shown it. I mean, the rushing numbers against the Vikings were ridiculous when they played the Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray did absolutely nothing. So Saquon Barkley is a little bit better, but I could still see a similar performance. So, I mean, that's just what you got to do. I mean, that's the one way you get in trouble in this game, in my opinion, is if you don't contain him and slow him down, and he has a couple big plays, or he's just continuously getting chunk plays, then you're in trouble. Because I think there's a cap on what the Bears offense can do. No knock on Chase Daniel. I just don't think they're going to be scoring 38 points.
All right. So that's a good segue into the matchup of the game then. So
that is my matchup of the game. Is
Saquon versus Roquan?
Sure. Yeah, we can go with that.
Because that's what I think it is. I think it comes down to Roquan Smith being a quote-unquote spy of Saquon Barkley, like you would spy a quarterback, like a Michael Vick or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what Vic Fangio needs to do in this game is say, wherever Saquon goes, Roquan goes. And that has to be the thing all game long. And then you just come after Eli. If you come after Eli and you can stop Saquon.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't see the Giants scoring more than 13 points in this game.
So to flip to the passing game for the Giants, here's the big, like, lick your chops, you know, statistic of the week is they've given up the most sacks in the NFL, and they have Eli Manning back there who is not going to be able to escape anything.
No, and at this point in his career, he basically just dives on the ground before you even get there. Yeah. So, I mean, he's in full-on survival
could be,
mode.
We could return the favor this week and give them the 9 sacks. Like, that could happen. I could see a scenario where that happens. But so that's huge that they're bad and we're good when it comes to pass pro and pass rush.
Yeah, this is a very, very good matchup for the Bears in so many ways, which is why Trubisky not playing doesn't really bother me all that much. I think it's fine. But the team can't just throw their jock on the field and win. They're going to lose if that's what they do. But if they come out and play the way that the Bears have played basically the entire season, I think this is a strong win. And I don't mean it's a blowout. I don't mean it's an easy win, but I think it's a strong win. It's a convincing win. And, you know, the Bears come out of this 9-3.
That would be delightful. What about the Bears offense?
Bears offense? I mean, again, it, you know, is bad as the Giants offensive line is and giving up sacks, that's how bad their pass rush is. They just don't get to the quarterback. That was a little bit of an issue for Chase Daniel. It's obvious that he doesn't quite have the feel in the pocket that Trubisky does. Now, obviously, what, 2 starts in 10 years or 3 starts in 10 years or whatever it was, that's going to do that for you. That's not a lot of actual game time. So that's something that could be a little bit improved this week with more preparation time. You know, he'll take all the snaps at practice, all that kind of stuff. They'll work on, you know, a game plan for Chase. Whereas last week we saw the game plan for Mitch that was altered to fit Chase. I think you're going to see a different game plan this week. So I'm not really concerned about that. Again, I do think that Adam Shaheen helps the running game. They have one of the worst bottom 5 running defenses in the NFL. I do think that the running game looks better this week than it has most of the season, if not the whole season.
That would be nice. It'd take a lot of pressure off Chase. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like it just kind of plays out on the offensive side of the ball similar as it did against the Lions. You know, it moves when it has to. It never looks crappy. You know, it just kind of is. It exists. It's kind of like an average kind of offense. You know, Chase Daniel will not lose you this game. He probably won't be winning any shootouts anytime soon, but he's going to do what you need him to do.
Okay. If Chase Daniel can get you 21 points, are you confident that the Bears win?
Yeah,
just Chase Daniel. I'm not talking about any other scores or anything like that. Like just Chase Daniel gets you 21 points.
Yeah, I mean, I'd feel decent about that.
Do you think that the Giants can score 22 or more points against the Bears defense?
Yeah, I do. I do think there's a pathway to that. I mean, it because they have 2 monster playmakers that could take it to the house any given play. So, yeah, they could do it. I mean, yeah, they could do it.
They were way less confident in this than I am. I don't see it. There's too many matchups in the favor of the Bears. Honestly, I think at this point, I don't even think you could say that Eli Manning is much of an upgrade, if an upgrade at all, over Chase Daniel. He's just not good anymore. If he ever was good to begin with, but
it's a 2-time Super Bowl MVP. Yeah, well, when the chips were down, he
Michael
won some
Strahan
games.
Was a 2-time Giants MVP or Super Bowl champion.
So he stole the hardware from Michael Strahan. Is that what you're saying?
I think he stole it from a lot of people on that defense. And but that's a whole different.
Was the only man that vanquished Tom Brady, you know, twice, and I think we can all be a little thankful for that. I'm not a Patriots hater, but it's just kind of boring to see them win all the time.
It's like the Yankees. You hate to see it. So score prediction, what do you got then?
Man, you know, I was, you know, when I was driving over here to record, I was thinking about it, and I was like on the ledge. I almost wanted to pick the Giants to win this game, believe it or not. But at the end of the day, because I'm kind of scared about the Saquon Barkley matchup. I'm scared of the tackling abilities because that's been a problem at times. But when you look at the trenches, when the Bears pass rush against their pass protection, and then you flip it around and they have 14 sacks all freaking year in 11 games, that's horrible. Like, if that just continues and there's no reason it shouldn't, you should win. So I will, even though I told you I could see them scoring 21, they could do it. I think they won't, and the Bears will win 24-18.
18, huh?
There'll be a late score. You know, what they do.
I can see that. All right.
And you'll be in secrecy, I assume, by your prediction.
Yes. I must. So, I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here for a minute.
Oh, yes.
Please do. I have a conspiracy theory about Matt Nagy, Jordan Howard, and the running game. And this is a very loose conspiracy theory.
By the way, before you dive in, at the risk of sounding really dumb right now, who is Alex Jones?
He's that guy from InfoWars. There's like that gif on Twitter where he's got like the tinfoil hat and he turns around and goes.
Okay. You couldn't see that InfoWars face. It was a good face. I know of InfoWars. I don't know Alex Jones, but continue. I thought it was like an obvious person.
He's a conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
So if you listen to the Matt Nagy mic'd up.
From a few weeks ago?
Yeah, it was more than a few, but
when he said, "I'm gonna get you going," or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, okay. And he brings him over in close, and he's like, I promise you, I'm gonna get you going."
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then Jordan Howard, a couple days ago, was interviewed, and you alluded to this, and that's what made me think about this because he said something to the effect of, "You know, coach has promised me, you know, he's gonna get me going and stuff," and he said that within the course of this conversation about how he's okay with his role in the offense right now because the team's winning and, you know, he's doing a lot of little things. He's throwing some key blocks. He's been really good at pass protection. You saw him on, I can't remember if it was, did Chase Daniel run a keeper and Jordan Howard threw a block for him or something. I don't remember, but there were some things that's been going on with Howard, you know, outside of just running the football. And I've been looking at this and I go, man, something just doesn't seem to jive here. You know that Matt Nagy, you know, he can say all he wants that some matchups are going to determine whether or not you run the football. I get all that, but the amount of carries for the running backs has been really, really low this year. And part of me looks at that and I say, when you were with Kansas City, you still ran the ball a ton. And I get that you had a more successful running back in the system in Kareem Hunt, but why is it that this running game isn't getting going? You can tweak your scheme and get this running game going. I am pretty confident in that. It's obvious that Jordan Howard prefers an outside zone scheme. He succeeded in it for 2 years in the NFL with more or less the same offensive line. So what's different now? The scheme is different. That's obvious. So my conspiracy theory is this. Matt Nagy has been saving his switch of the running game scheme for the perfect time when he needs to unleash it. When everybody's going to expect him to come out and run these inside zone power ISO plays, pulling guards, all that fun stuff. And they're going to come out and they're going to run the outside zone and be totally unprepared for it. And Jordan Howard is just going to gash him.
I would love it if that was true, and maybe it is, but here's the play. The
chess game that Matt Nagy has played this year, it would not surprise me if he's been playing this long game all season long.
We'd have
just to mess with other teams at this point in the season.
That'd be amazing. That'd be mad scientist, you know, evil genius stuff. But, like, here's why I don't think that's happening is because there's been games, you know, recently where we've needed to run the ball at the end of the game to win the game, and we have not done well. I mean, it took Tariq Cohen a James Daniels, you know, catch and carry 5 yards across the first down marker to get that first down. And Jordan Howard has been in the games to salt these games away, has done absolutely nothing, got 1 yard, no yards, losses. Like, why not bust it out just right then and there, just for that drive, just to ice the game, if that was the case?
Because you tip your hand then.
Yeah, but you might lose a game.
I told you this was a loose conspiracy theory.
I think it's very loose. But I would. It would be really cool. I agree with you, man. It's like, why is there a reason, in your opinion, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent here? Like, why would he not go to the outside zone just to get the running game going? I mean, he's a smart guy. He's got to know that that's, you know, probably preventing this running game from getting going. Why would he not do that?
My theory on it
is, does it really have that much of a ripple effect throughout the rest of the offense if you start doing that instead of this? Does it affect the passing game at all?
Yes, I think it does, actually, because you can't really run that outside zone so much when you're running RPOs. So an RPO is going to be an up the middle kind of run, at least between the tackles. I suppose you could run off tackle with that. It's a long developing play where you're handing the ball, you know, to the running back. Let's just say, for instance, he's to your left and you're going to run to the right side. You're handing that ball off and he's going, you know, off tackle that way. The outside zone blocking scheme where everybody's blocking in one direction is going to give away that play right away. It would work well to pull it and throw. That would be an advantage. But with the inside zone, you can run your running and pass blocking straight up, and, you know, it works just fine that way. I think that's part of it. The other part of it is Matt Nagy wants to attack defenses both vertically and horizontally on every play. So he wants to have, you know, routes that are going to, you know, underneath crossing routes. So in my opinion, those are more of your horizontal routes. They're moving you east and west. And then you're going to have vertical routes, you know, your just go routes and your deep posts and things like that, that are going to be run simultaneously with them in the same route concept. I think on the running plays, it's the same thing. So that jet sweep motion, the end around motion, you know, kind of all that kind of stuff that happens behind the running back, that stuff is kind of worthless if you run outside zone. Because the running game is flowing to the outside anyway, The outside zone is a more east-west until you get to the one cut, and then you're north-south, which is the exact same thing as a jet sweep, right? I mean, you're basically running it as a sweep instead of off tackle. There's not a whole lot of difference to that. So if you do that, you're basically running a double reverse as your running game. But if you run up the middle and then you have this out, now you're attacking them north-south and east-west at the same time. And that's what holds the linebackers and freezes them, because they're watching this motion and the safeties are doing the same thing. And if the running back does get through there, he's usually got 4 or 5 yards before he gets hit, because the linebackers have to pause. So that's the reason why I think that they're doing this. The other reason is 10 other guys now get to practice how to run this scheme that are going to be here next year. So when you do get a new running back, it's plug and play. So if you alter the scheme that you don't want to run, doesn't fit your offensive philosophy, now you've taken a step back on the running game for another year. You have to install a new running scheme when you should be in year 2 of an offensive scheme. You're now year 1.5. You see what I mean? So I think that plays a role. If I had to guess, that's as good of a guess as I got.
All right. Well, tinfoil hat removed. I think that'll put this one in the books.
Yeah. So, all right. So I think we both got the Bears winning here. Yeah, should be a good game. So that's going to do it for episode 7 of the Bears Link podcast. And you can always find my writings at Windy City Gridiron. And of course, subscribe to the Bears Link podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or the Google Play Store or wherever you find your podcasts. You will find the Bears Link podcast. So for my brother Kevin, I am Andrew, and bear down, folks.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.